episode of the Super Retriever Series Behind the Line podcast, where we talk all things Super Retrievers. Hey, everybody, I'm your host, David Hamilton, and today we have two great guests. Usually we have one, but occasionally here on the podcast, we have two. We have Leo Joseph III and Mark Polke, and we'll talk to both of them in just a moment. We have an action-packed show today because guess what? We're already a quarter of the way through the 2024 Super Retriever Series season, and we want to talk to them about that. But as always, we want to start the podcast by thanking our sponsor. This episode of the Behind the Line podcast and all of the Super Retriever Series is brought to you by Eukanuba. If you want to get the most out of your dog in your training sessions, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. Eukanuba's premium performance lineup is built with the nutrients that dogs need to help them unleash their maximum potential. That starts with providing energy that matches their efforts, supporting optimal nutrient delivery, and supporting post-exercise recovery. Check out the Eukanuba premium performance lineup and find your dog's fuel at eukanubasportingdog.com. As I mentioned, the guests today, we have two of them, Mr. Leo Joseph III, who's been on our podcast a few times, and a new member here as a guest on our podcast, Mr. Mark Polke. So, gentlemen, welcome to the both of you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here also.
All right. Well, let's get started. We've got a lot to talk about. It seems like the season's flying by. It seems like just the other day was the first event of the year, and yet we're a quarter of the way through the season, and we already have 47 dogs qualified for the crown with a purse already of $25,000 to date. So that's a lot of dogs already qualified, and that purse for our winners later this year in Shreveport-Bossier City will just continue to grow throughout the year. I'll turn it over to whoever wants to answer that one. Let's just talk about the season so far and how it's going from an overall perspective of the state of the SRS. Leo, you want to take that one?
Yes. I feel like this is going really well so far. I can't believe we're a quarter of the way through the year. Like you said, it feels like we just got started. When Shannon sent out in the email that we were a quarter away of the way through, I kind of had to check her math. But so far it's been an extremely smooth year. We've had consistent numbers, so I don't have a single complaint. What about you, Mark?
Yes, sir. It's just unbelievable. It's so great to be a part of this organization. Such great people. Already a quarter of the way finish. Just the competition is just growing more and more every year. More and more events. I think the sky's the limit, and it's just unbelievable that we're a quarter of the way through already.
And last year at our crown, we had a cash purse of $66,000, and when you add in all the prize packages, the total purse was over $100,000. But as we said, already $25,000 to date, so that'll be great for all the competitors and for our winners. Guys, this is the 25th year of the Super Retriever Series. It's going to be our 25th crown championship down in Shreveport-Bossier City. Wow, 25 years and the sport just keeps on growing. Leo, I know you've been around for several of these years. Tell us your thoughts on just, you know, where you see the SRS now and where it's just going to continue to grow.
It's really become popular. The amateur division, to me, I think it's seen the most growth over the last few years since I've been in the game. Like Mark just said, we have so many more events than we used to have. And the sky's the limit. I think that we will continue to grow. One thing about SRS that separates it from everything else, the board is very in touch with what's going on. You know, if somebody says something online or somebody files a complaint, we try to be as prompt as we can. We try to change and keep up with the times and make sure that we're doing the best we can. And I think that Shannon's attentiveness to what is her customer base is making a huge difference in the SRS, and it's really pushing it in a positive direction.
Yep. And I'm glad you mentioned the board, because that's one of the reasons that we wanted to have Mark here on the show today. Leo, I know that you wanted to come on as a board member and just kind of talk about someone who's been a long-term serving board member, and then also maybe give us a little announcement about the board.
Yeah, so earlier this year, we were really disappointed to hear that Rhody Best was stepping down from the board. Rhody has been on the board for a long time. Rhody's been a part of SRS for as long as I can remember. And you can Google some really old videos and pull up some YouTube shots of Rhody from a way long time ago playing the SRS game. Rhodey's still a part of SRS. He's actually having a great year right now. He won last weekend. He still wants to be a part of it. I know that he and Shannon still talk regularly, but he just didn't feel like he could continue to give the amount he was giving and be on the board. You know, he and his wife, Kristen, run a huge operation in Page, Texas. And so he stepped back. We tried to not accept his resignation, but apparently it doesn't work that way. So the only positive to Rhodey getting off the board was that we were able to get Mark Polky on as a board member. For anybody that's been around SRS the last few years, they know Mark. He's a part of the Schumach Retriever group, and he's been a successful competitor. He is judged. He is marshaled. He's always willing to lend a helping hand. And outside of the SRS, obviously, he's come in with a lot of success in different venues. He's been in several different businesses and been successful. Just a natural leader with a lot of dog knowledge. So I think he is going to be a perfect fit for the board.
And Mark, I guess perfect question to you is, what you're looking forward to the most about being on the board?
Oh, I'm just so excited to be a part of an organization that is going to be growing leaps and bounds in the future, and just trying to lend a helping hand in anything I can do to make this the greatest retriever sport there is around. When I was asked, I was floored. I had no idea I was fixing to be asked, but I'm just beyond myself and so excited to just try to grow this sport and make it a great game for everyone.
Leo gave us a little bit of your background there, but how many years you've been competing in the dog game, and just give us a kind of brief bio for those who may not know as much about you as some of the other competitors.
Yes, it's about 12 years that I am running retrievers and training. I wasn't a professional until about 5 years ago. I started working with Chuck McCall at Schumach Kennels. I do a lot of the young dog work, and I always did run some HRC events and a couple AKC events, but it wasn't until 2 years ago that I was able to start competing and had dogs that could run the SRS events. And I started running a little dog by the name of Poppy, which was a daughter off of my dog that I've always ran, Breeze, which Chuck had trained. And I started becoming successful with it. And so it's about 2 years now that I'm competing in the SRS, but I've always followed it and always dreamed to be able to compete at that level.
Well, and as Leo said a moment ago, you're a competitor, you've been a marshal, you've been a judge, and now you're going to be a board member. Leo, I know every year we have you come on and kind of talk a little bit about what are some of the new rule changes that year. And I know that we want to have you do that here today, but I'm actually going to be quiet for a minute and kind of let you turn it over to you and Mark to talk about it, because I'd love to hear from you about any kind of new rule changes there are this year. And then also, since Mark's going to be the new board member, just kind of get Mark's perspective on those as well.
That sounds good. So every year at the end of the year, Shannon sends every Super Retriever Series member a questionnaire where they can fill it out, give recommendations, give critiques, even give us a pat on the back if they want to. And we spend a lot of time going through those, probably 12 to 15 hours as a board, that we're reading those, talking about what we can do to accommodate some of the things that are pointed out. And usually every year there are several rule changes that come from that. So I'm going to go over a few of those for this year. One of the consistent things with the events getting bigger is time management. We seem to be okay if the weather's good and if everything runs smoothly, but if you've got an 80 dog event and things, maybe you get a rain shower in the middle, a little lightning delay, it really makes it hard to finish. So we've got two rule changes associated with that. The first one is the judges now have the ability to tell a competitor that they have failed the test. So if things are getting bad and it's not going well and the judges feel like this dog is no longer going to be in a position where it can win the event or place at the event, they have the right to tell the handler that to pick their dog up. I think this is a big thing. I think that there are situations where maybe a dog's getting hot and the handler just doesn't want to quit. Everybody out there is a competitor. They obviously don't want to quit. But the judges or the marshal now can tell them, hey, today's not going to be y'all's day. We appreciate you, but we need to move on. Will you please call them in? And hopefully that will help in some of these situations move the event along a little quicker. Another change, if there are more than 70 dogs that start an event, we will have a cut after the first series. Now, we always have a cut after the second series and a cut after the third. But now, if more than 70 dogs start the event, we will cut to 30 open dogs and 30 am dogs after the first series. This is kind of a test run. Hopefully, if you go off of last year's numbers, we should have 3 to 5 events that have a cut. So if they do, we'll kind of get to see how that works, get to feel everybody out. And it may be something we do away with, or it may be something that we put in on a larger scale. And both of these changes are centered around trying to make sure that we have quality third and fourth series tests. You know, the worst thing that can happen is you have a really good first two series, but because of time management, you end up in a situation where you have a watered down third or fourth series. We really want the judges to be able to put on the best test they can to make sure that they find the best dog that weekend. So we hate having to cut a few people, but it's the Super Retriever Series. And if that's what we need to do to make sure we find the right dog, that is something we're willing to do.
Mark, thoughts on these new rules and how do you think that will impact the game in a positive nature?
Yeah, just to reiterate what Leo was talking about, most definitely, you know, we're looking for the best dogs there. So it's only right to be able, you know, every other retriever game that everyone's competing in now, you know, they do cut dogs. They do fail dogs. I believe we were the only one that wasn't. But I believe that by cutting it, we like Leo said, we can make the events much better and give us a real chance to find out what's the best dog that weekend.
That's right.
Gentlemen, I'm interested. What's been the feedback so far?
So far, we have not had an event that had to be cut. So we're a quarter of the way through the year, and it is not we hadn't got to use it yet. So hopefully at some point we'll hit a few events. I know we've had several events in the high 60s. We just hadn't had that event with 70 dogs starting yet.
Now, Leo, I believe we were talking a couple of weeks back, and you had mentioned to me that you had did some research going back with the dogs that were, I forget what the point system was, but like in – say in the open division would have been in the 30th spot to the 35th spot or somewhere in there, and not one of those dogs was able to come back. And I'm not sure if they made the finals or won. I can't recollect. Could you reiterate on that?
Yes. So I will get as accurate as I can because that's been a couple of sleeps ago. But in the last 3 years, there has not been a single dog come back from farther than 30th to come back 30th place after the first series to come back and make the top six. There have only been two dogs come back from 25th after the first series to make the top six. And I don't remember the exact number, but it's less than 10 have come back from more than 20th after the first series to end up making the top six. So there was a time, I think what that's telling us is there was a time when you had people running field trial dogs and people running hunt test dogs. So they would do really good in one of those first two series and then have a bad series or vice versa. So you would see big shifts on your leaderboard. Now there are a lot of dogs that run the Super Retriever Series and they're good at it. So if you don't have a great first series, you're probably in trouble. And that is how we landed at 30. So I'm glad you brought that up, Mark. I thought those were some good statistics, and that is how we ended up at the 30 number.
Any other rule changes that people may need to be aware of, or things that the board has taken into consideration or will be taking into consideration?
Yeah, so another one, we added another type of event this year. So when you run an SRS, you can only enter either 6 dogs or 8 dogs per handler, depending on whichever one of those the club chooses. Most every club goes with an 8 dog handler limit. We have added an open only event. So a club can have an event that does not have an amateur division. And when they do this, you can go to 10 dogs per handler. Now, amateur handlers can obviously still run the open, but there are some clubs and areas that have a hard time making events. SRS just hadn't called on there. They haven't had one there before. And this gives them a really good opportunity to host an event. If you can talk a few open handlers into coming, talk a few pros into coming that have 10 dogs, you can make your event pretty easily and hopefully start SRS somewhere new and get it headed in the right direction in a new area. Another big rule change we had, and I'm actually going to let Mark talk about this one. We're doing a 1 month trial. We'll vote on it again at the next meeting. And for 1 month, the judges and the marshal have to tell the handlers if there is a corridor on the blind. And if there is, they have to tell them what the point penalty is and where it is. So, Mark, do you want to kind of describe that for us a little bit?
Yeah, Leo. Now, either the marshal or the judges have to describe kind of what their boundaries are, what their corridor is for that particular blind, and what the penalty is if you get out of that corridor. I think it's a good rule. I think it's black and white, no guessing involved. I think where it helps out is someone that only has 1 or 2 dogs, or you have to run really early before you can kind of figure out what the penalty is and kind of what the boundaries are. It helps the guys just know from the beginning. It's fair. Like if you have a pro that runs 8 dogs, by his 3rd dog or 4th, he kind of knows what the judges are really asking for, which is a little bit of an advantage of someone that only has 1 or 2 dogs, or an amateur, you know, that's just there with 1 dog, and God forbid he gets picked first to run. So he knows from the start what the boundaries are, what the penalties are, and myself personally, I think it's a good rule. I think it takes all the gray areas out. It tells everyone kind of what the judges are looking for, and it's a fair playing field for everyone.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment. It's all about transparency and getting to a point to where we're not playing a guessing game. We're saying, guys, this is what we want to see. In our opinion, this is how a good dog should run this blind. Now show me you have a good dog. It really makes me I tell you what it makes me think about, Mark, and it's not in a black and white kind of way. You know, when you go run the HRC Grand, you know you're going to run 3 marks and a blind. And there's not going to be a lot of jazz. There's not going to be a lot of tricks. You're going to run 3 marks and a blind. And they're just betting that their marks and their blind are good enough that they don't have to trick you. You're not going to be able to do them. And that's kind of what I think about with this rule. We're basically saying, this is where the blind is. This is where the corridor is. I bet you still can't do it.
I agree with you 1,000% on that, Leo.
Before we see if there's any more rule changes you want to talk about, or see if we want to talk about SRSU, real quick, wanted to thank our sponsor again, Yukonuba. If you want to get everything your dog's got, you need nutrition that holds nothing back to help unleash your dog's maximum potential. Check out the Yukonuba Premium Performance lineup at yukonubasportingdog.com. Our guest today, Leo Joseph III, Mark Polke, talking about SRS rule changes here in 2024. Also, the state of Super Retriever Series. If you guys still want to talk more rules, great. If you want to move on, something else I want to talk about is the Super Retriever Series University SRSU to help continue growing some of the interest among the younger competitors. If you guys want to take it from here, just tell people, again, if you want to go back to rules, great. And if you want to move on to the SRSU, let's just talk about that, about how we're continuing to try to grow the sport among maybe some of our younger competitors.
Yeah, so we will circle back to rules. There's two more things I think we need to hit. But as far as SRSU, I think that's a great thing. And when you were talking right then, I couldn't help but think the thing that was standing out to me, we always look at it and we always bill it as a way to grow the SRS and a way to introduce young handlers into the SRS. But it's really a lot more than that. It's one of the only opportunities out there to introduce young handlers to the dog game at all. So it's really not just about bringing in young handlers and introducing them to the Super Retriever Series. It's about bringing in young handlers and introducing them to the competitive world of retrievers. So you find a kid that likes to duck hunt or enjoys playing with his Labrador Retriever, and you bring them in and you introduce them to just what that dog can do, and or maybe into just a whole nother side of duck hunting that they haven't thought about. It's really a venue where you can bring somebody in and introduce them. Maybe they end up being a field trial person. Maybe they end up liking hunt tests. But this can be their opportunity to meet up with some people that can help them start that journey.
And as Leo said, if you don't have a dog at this level or don't have a coach that can help you through the event, we can help you find both. Just obviously reach out to Shannon or send us a message on Facebook or Instagram. This year's SRS University competition is May 24th through the 26th and will be held in Brilliant, Alabama. Leo, I know you said there's two more rules y'all want to circle back to. So Leo and Mark, take it away.
So one of the things we want to do here, we're going to take two rules and just discuss them and try to kind of clear up some of the gray areas. And I before I start this, I want to say, as you listen to Mark and I discuss these rules, if you have a question, please email it to Shannon or maybe comment somewhere where this was shared. And in the future, we'll try to have a marshal or a board member come on and answer some questions during one of the podcasts. So if you have questions, please feel free to send them in. The first thing I want to talk about just broad level judging marks and judging blinds in the SRS. So if it's all right with Mark, I'll talk about the marks and I'm going to turn it over to him for the blind. Obviously, we'll probably have some discussion in there as well. So the SRS rule book tells you to take a wait and see approach when judging a mark. And you actually give the dog a score for that mark. So if a dog leaves the line, proceeds directly to the area of the fall, and establishes a hunt, picks up the bird, never leaves a reasonable hunt area, I would expect that dog's score to be between a 0 and a 10. Now, if you have to handle to the area on a mark, you get 20 points for handling to the area plus 2 for the whistle. If you handle in the area, you only get 2. And Mark, I know one of the things that I've been hearing a lot is people talking about how sometimes a dog that has a handle on a mark will end up with a better score than a dog that goes out there and works it out. And that is true. That is going to happen. Even the field trial rule book says that a quick handle is preferable to an extended hunt. So it doesn't really play out that way in the field trials I've been to, but that is something that we actually got from their own rule book. But as a judge, when I'm judging marks, I try not to write anything until either the handler blows the whistle, the dog picks up the bird, or I think in my mind, this guy should have handled, guy or gal should have handled, rather than letting this dog continue to hunt, because this, I don't think the dog marked the bird, and I don't think it knows where the bird is. Tell us a little bit about what you're thinking, Mark.
Yeah, Leo, I'm the same way. It's a wait-and-see approach. Watch the dog. There's nothing beautiful than watching a dog's brain work while in the field. Don't rush it. Let him figure it out. A dog that goes out there, maybe he's not right directly in the right spot, but kind of figures where he went and where he has been and where he shouldn't go, and kind of figures it out and gets there, that's a thing of beauty. And the wait-and-see approach, kind of, that's what it describes. And I'm the same as you. You know, you just watch the dog, and then the dog's really lost. You thought the handler should have handled. Well, you mark down that, you know, a 20. And then you judge the line for the mark, which is most of the time 1 to 18 or 0 to 18 if it's a perfect mark. So the mark score is kind of the line it takes there. If he didn't handle, if he goes directly to the bird, it's a 0. If he goes and makes a little loop, it'll be a 2. If he makes a circle, it'd be a 4. If he makes a couple circles kind of in the area, it'd be 6. Backside the gun, 1 or 2 circles, it'd be 10, and so on. If he picks it up clean, but wait and see. Give the dog time, then judge accordingly.
That's right. I agree with that 100%. And the way I kind of break it down in my head, and this isn't in the rule book, we're getting into opinion now, but the biggest thing for me is when it gets gray, and you know, the rule book is there to give you the tools you need to assess the work you saw in the field and put a numeric value. So when I feel like I'm in a gray area, what I like to do is think, all right, what did I see, and where does that work belong among the other work I've seen? So if somebody just goes out there and absolutely hammers it, and I know that it's the best run I've seen all day, I'm going to look back and make sure that it's the best run. I don't want to become so objective that I take away the judge's ability to judge. But specifically with marks, if a dog proceeds directly to the area of the fall and establishes a hunt and doesn't leave the area, picks the bird up, I'm going to be a 0 to 10. Used to, there was a 10-point handle to the area penalty. We changed it to 20 so that you had a bigger gap in there. So I try not to use that 10 to 20 score for a mark unless the dog did some things I didn't like. Maybe he backsided the gun, or maybe he left the fall area a few times and had a bigger hunt than I would like to have seen, but still did a good job. Now, if I feel like the dog didn't mark the bird and he is wandering around lost, that's when I'm going to do exactly what you said. I'm going to write down a 20, and I'm going to start assessing wandering penalties after that. And he may end up finding the bird at some point, but if he stumbled on the bird lost after an 8-minute hunt, he may get an 80 on that bird. You can't reward that either. But the dog that has a nice, intelligent hunt, like what you were describing earlier, you really don't want to beat that dog up too bad. And I feel like where I get in trouble on that is I'm trying too hard to differentiate between a 0 and a 2 and a 2 and a 4. So I just kind of end up stretching that 0 to 10 a little too far. Another thing with evaluating the marks, and the rule book gives you the ability to, the judges and the marshal, or the judges before the series and the handlers meeting, you can change the penalty for a return to an old fall. So if it's a big white coat and the marks are really spread out, I like to really ramp up that old fall penalty and encourage people to handle if they're even thinking they may get in an old fall. I don't see that getting used a lot, but I think it's a tool that is probably a little underutilized by the judges and the marshals. Do you have anything else to add to marking?
No, Leo, I think we pretty much touched on all the points.
I got you. All right, so now you just judged an event this weekend where y'all had a monster water blind. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that and then talk to us about how you encourage your judges to judge a blind when you marshal and what tools you use that the SRS rulebook gives you to evaluate the dog work?
Yeah, Leo, we just finished judging the Red River Shootout in Texas. And Kevin Redmond and I, in the third series, we did have a big water blind. It was down the hill entry into a finger of a pond, over water grass, and then back into a bigger pond, angling across to a channel on the right side. We had we call it a poison bird. If you pick it up, it was a disqualification. But the poison bird was thrown on a rope, and the other bird we were using was placed on a lump of grass where the bird stayed at the same place for every competitor. And the second bird was just a fake throw with a double sloosh in the first finger you had to cut across. And what we were looking for, we did have a boundary. We had a right-hand boundary with no left-hand boundary. All the trouble was on the left side. You had to keep your left hand in your pocket, in other words. And we were just looking for control, getting past the sloosh. And then once they got there, they had to get that cast in the big water. If they didn't get that cast in the big water, the visibility was kind of limited on that left side. And before you knew it, your dog had picked up the poison bird. And they would throw it out on a rope and then pull in the other one and just leave the other one placed on the grass. And we were looking for control. We were looking for a biddable dog that would take every cast. They were struggling in the beginning. And then everyone kind of figured out after watching kind of what they had to do. And things started working out for them. But when I'm marshaling or judging, I like to set up a blind that obviously is going to challenge the dogs, but have factors in it. Not so much if you miss this log by, and a lot of people do it, but just my personal preference, if you miss jumping over a log by 1 foot, costs you 50 points. And you got a really fast dog, and you know you just miss it, and that would be, is that worth more than two handles or like two handles, you know, running a blind? So I like to set up factors, let the dog and the handler work as a team. If they miss something by 6 inches, don't make it where that could put them out of the competition, because let's face it, in the open division, you get a 50-point penalty, your chances of placing is slim and none. But hit all the factors, work as a team, real fluent, real smooth blinds, and I think that's what, on my personal opinion, is a great blind and what I am looking for when I'm judging and what I'm trying to set up when I'm judging and when I'm marshaling. That's what I try to encourage my judges to do. You got anything on it, Leo?
Man, I ditto. So on that blind, it sounds like what y'all did, you knew the danger was to the left, so you put a right-hand corridor. How many points were you giving them for that right-hand corridor?
10 points.
So if they went outside the right-hand corridor, they got 10 points. I'm sure if they stayed out there, they kept getting 10 points.
Yes, sir.
And you dared them to go left.
Yes, sir. That's where the trouble was.
I like your style. That's a great way to do it. You know, one of the other things I think about, especially dealing with the corridors, we see corridors a lot. It's a way for the judges to force you to challenge the blind. one of the questions I always get is, if you blow your whistle while the dog's in the corridor, but he's got a semi-tight sit, but he ends up just outside the corridor, are you going to get the points? I always say no. But if he doesn't come back in with that cast, you're going to get them.
That's correct. I mean, they're trying to challenge your blind. They have a corridor, and a lot of times these corridors, it just all depends if your dog will sit to the left or if your dog will sit to the right. If they're really trying to challenge my corridor and they blow the whistle and it just pops up to the right or left of it, I'm the same as you. Give it a cast, you get back in, you're good. You don't get back in, well, you better blow it again and try to get back in. But, you know, I'm the same with that situation as you. Same thoughts.
Yeah, and another situation that comes up, I've heard people say that they like to give the corridor penalty every time somebody blows the whistle. And for me, I want it to be you're going to get it every so often. So let's say that you're running a dog, and, man, you are fighting as hard as you can to challenge my blind. But you're outside the corridor, and you're fighting that dog to get back in, but it's giving you some trouble. So, you know, if it's a 10-point corridor, when you went out of the corridor, you got 10 points. You attempted to get back in, but you didn't, so you get a cash refusal.
That's correct.
And then you immediately blow the whistle again and try to get back in. I'm not going to give you the corridor penalty just because you blew the whistle. You're going to get a cash refusal if you don't get back in. If you don't get the cash, you won't. But I'm not going to just sit there and beat you over the head with that penalty. I'm going to give it again at some point if you don't get in. But I'm not just going to sit there and hammer you. And the other thing goes, if you just let your dog run outside of a corridor, and I told you where that corridor was, not only am I going to keep giving you corridor penalties, but I'm going to hit you with avoiding the test as well.
You took the words out of my mouth. I was fixing to iterate on that. This weekend, we had a couple dogs that had a big win, and they would give that one cast to get back in, and with the win, they'd get a cash refusal. I rewarded the handler. I did give cash refusals like you just talked about, but I rewarded the handler that kept trying, whereas I penalized the handler that knew his dog and knew he could not get that cast and let him run down the corridor just about the whole way and then kind of tried to get in at the end. I beat up that dog, whereas I felt as though he was avoiding my test, but the handler that really tried, their score showed that they were really trying to work with their dog and doing exactly what we asked them to do by identifying the corridor and the factors.
That's right. The other thing you talked about was jumping a log or hitting a keyhole. And, man, I agree with you 100%. That is, in my opinion, that's somewhat of a stylistic thing. But when I'm setting up a hazard in a blind or an obstacle in a blind, maybe it's jumping a log, but I want to make sure that the penalty matches what the dog did wrong. So if the dog misses a 3-foot log, in my opinion, that's not as bad, or even a 10-foot log, that's not as bad as handling on 2 marks. So I'm not going to make that a 50-point penalty. Now, some judges may think that is as bad, and that is completely within their discretion. I don't think you or I are trying to criticize their style, but you want to make sure that the penalty matches the mistake. You don't want it to strictly be a log jumping competition or a keyhole hitting competition. I don't know if you saw this. There was an event recently where they did not give a penalty for missing a particular keyhole, but they said you had to go through it. So if it took you 20 casts to get through the keyhole, you had 20 casts. But if you just sailed on through it, you sailed through it. But there was no point penalty for missing it, but you had to go through it. I thought that was another interesting take on how to handle that situation.
No doubt.
The other thing, a lot of times in the SRS, it'll be a big point penalty for missing an obstacle, but they give you the ability to call the dog back and try again. I also am a fan of making it a much smaller point penalty, but you only get one shot.
I agree with you on that also, Leo.
Guys, I got to be honest. Everything y'all have been saying, it's been great to me, and I know it'll be great to our listeners. I actually think that this might be our probably most listened to episode when we look back at metrics, because I know people always want to know what are the judges thinking, and to have the two of you talk from the judge perspective or the marshal perspective or even as board members who help write the rules, this has been fantastic. Anything else that you guys want to chat about before we wrap it up here?
I just want to say one more time, if you have any questions, please send them in. I know that we can get another board member, another marshal on here at some point and continue this discussion. I think that trying to be as transparent and educate as many people as we can on the rules will only lead to the SRS being more successful.
I agree with that. One other thing, David, I'd like to touch on is anyone listening in the South Louisiana area, I have a pretty good little dog, and I would love to coach a kid in the U this year, in the SRSU. So if anyone's listening in my general area, South Louisiana, and you'd like to run a dog and really learn this game that we all fall in love with, hit me up and we'll go have a blast.
Mark, I love that. I love that endorsement, and I love that right there, your eagerness to be a coach at the SRSU. As we mentioned earlier, SRSU this year will be May 24th to May 26th in Brilliant, Alabama. If you're looking for a coach and you're in the South Louisiana area, chat with Mark. If you're elsewhere, we can help find you a coach. Leo, this has been super educational. I love the idea. So people, please, on Facebook, on Instagram, anywhere you can communicate with us with the Super Retriever Series, send your questions in, and I promise we'll do exactly that. We will get the questions. I will read them out, and we will have a judge or two or a board member or two join, and we will have an entire episode of just answering any questions that our competitors have, because as you said, you know, we want to make sure that everybody enjoys this game, but the best way to enjoy the game is to make sure you're educated on the rules and know what our judges are looking for. One other shout out here, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the 25th Super Retriever Series Crown Championship, 25 years, will be in Shreveport-Bossier City this year. The Superdoc competition will be October 25th through the 27th, and then the Retriever Trials for the Crown Championship will be immediately following that, October 28th through November 3rd. So come on out to Shreveport-Bossier City and see the greatest Retriever teams in the world compete. If you want to know who's already qualified, or as the season continues to go on, check out superretrieverseries.com. There you can see every dog and handler team that's qualified in both the open and amateur division. You can see who's earned UKC SRS titles and can see the most up-to-date points in the Yukonuba Team of the Year race. Leo, thanks for being here with us. As you said, I want to echo your sentiments of thanking Rhody Best for his several years on the board. Mark, thank you for coming on, and thank you also for stepping into that role and being a board member. And these rules that the guys chatted about, if you have any questions about the rules, please send those in. And if you just want to see the rules and see what's new, you can find a full list of the rules. Just go to superretrieverseries.com, then click on the SRS info tab, and then click on rules. And actually, all the new rules from 2024 are listed in red for easy reference there. Final thing I want to say to everybody at home is don't forget to check us out on YouTube. Also, go to the Super Retriever Series, like and subscribe to get all things SRS. We've been loading up a ton of interviews on there, including some with our top handlers from last year's Crown Championship, as well as some new short videos. And by subscribing, you'll actually get a notification anytime that we publish a new video. So, Leo Joseph, Mark Polkey, thank you both for joining us on this episode of the Behind the Line podcast. Till next time, everyone, I'm your host, David Hamilton, and we'll chat with you soon.